Welcome back, Ruby Tuesday. I'm Patrick Ruby of Sports on Earth, and today we're going to talk NBA. Now, why are we talking NBA in the middle of the summer? Well, because it's been a crazy town offseason so far, highlighted by the unlikely free agent move of a championship-winning, future Hall of Fame small forward from one Eastern Conference team to another. And no, I am not talking about Paul Pierce to the Washington Wizards. But we will get to that. I am, of course, talking about LeBron James going back to Cleveland, which is probably the biggest pro basketball story of the year, one of the biggest sports stories, period, and also the first domino in what has been one of the most entertaining NBA offseasons that I can remember. So joining me to sort through the madness is my sports and media colleague, Sean Powell. Sean, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Patrick, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Last time you were on, we were going to talk about basketball and the playoffs, and instead we spent almost all our time talking about Donald Sterling, which is something I don't recommend to anybody, by the way. If you have a conversational choice, go through Dore. But, you know, for good or bad, Donald Sterling was definitely the biggest story of the NBA, and in some ways the news in general, until LeBron trumped that by returning to the Cavs. We've had a crazy weekend of that. You know, we're recording on a Monday. This is going to run on a Tuesday. So a lot of the speculation, the smoke, the unnamed sources close to the situation. And by the way, so many sources, such little hard information. All of that is gone now. James is back where he began his NBA career. You've had time to digest this, to process it. What are your sort of main initial thoughts on his move?
Well, if I were subscribed to a conspiracy theory, I would say...
Yes, please. I subscribe to many. Go for it.
You know where I'm going with this. It was set up like this all along. LeBron would go to Miami because he couldn't get anybody to come to Cleveland. So he would go to Miami. The Cavs would be horrible for, what, 3 years, 4 years, whatever. They would stockpile high draft picks, and then LeBron would finally have... he'd finally be able to come back, and the Cavs would have gotten rid of all the bad contracts, so they would have money to spend.
Right.
I don't subscribe that completely because, if you got to also factor in the Cavs getting lucky enough to get three number one picks in that.
See, you say lucky. That's where I see conspiracies. The draft lottery is the number one place for conspiracy theories in all of sports.
Well, you know, a lot of the conspiracy theorists, they sort of backed out when David Stern left because, you know, with the whole frozen envelope and Patrick Ewing.
Right.
But now you're saying that, you know, even Adam Silver is in on it now. Come on now, Patrick.
We don't know. David Stern has left, air quotes, the NBA. We don't know where the wizard is behind the scenes. Do we really know? Like maybe Adam Stern has some sort of mind control device. I'm sorry, Adam Silver from David Stern. See what I'm saying? I'm getting them confused.
Well, I tell
maybe
you,
he was a loyal deputy. We don't really know. I know this is all silly. Let's put that aside.
Yeah, let's put it aside for the time being, and let's look at it as it is.
Okay.
Eventually, he was going to go back to Cleveland. He just didn't know when.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he saw an opening. See. If Cleveland was still a horrible team without Kyrie Irving,
mm-hmm.
okay, without Andrew Wiggins, do you think he would have come back? See, that is a big, big question. I say no. I say he would have stayed in Miami at least for one, maybe two more years.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, this was his opening. And he also read the public. The public said, hey, it's okay, you can go back. He read Cleveland. Cleveland said, yeah, okay, you can come back. So I think he read the situation perfectly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was all aligned to really make it pretty much a glitch-free decision. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite in terms of the reaction. It's quite the opposite to compare to when he left. When he left, it was, you know, people ridiculed, you know, angry, whatever. Now it's universally applauded. He is... It's funny how perception works, huh?
It is. How did he manage to spin this all around?
Well, you know, a lot has changed. Number one, he has a family. He's a family man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's expecting a daughter. He wants his kids to be raised in, you know, in Ohio. He wants them to attend the same high school as he did, you know, in Akron. And I think LeBron, because of all the craziness around him, you know, celebrities since mm-hmm. he was 14 years old, blah, blah, blah. There is a part of him that has decided, you know what, as long as I stay connected to my roots, I will have some level of sanity in my abnormal life.
Sure.
It's sort of like the way, you know, Michael Jackson was a star when he was 12.
Yeah, you know what? Child stars always want to stay connected to some piece of their childhood. It's probably the last time they remember things being sane, right?
Well, it was the last time of innocence, you know. It was the last time, and of course, with LeBron, his innocence was lost at age 14, but still, he could claim to a part of his life that was not always dissected, you know, that was where he can go out to the mall with his friends and not be mobbed or whatever. He can now, and see, he will never, that's part of his life he will never recapture, all right? So there's probably part of him that says, you know what, I feel a kinship with that. It keeps me sane. It keeps me grounded. It keeps me feeling good about myself. So I want to reconnect. I want to be there. Not only do I want to have it for my kids, and oh, by the way, I think I can also win with this team because they have Kyrie, they've got Wiggins, and they've got Vergeau, and they've got some help. So I think the moons were aligned, you know, and this is what we got.
Right, and I don't have to sacrifice any money this time around. I can take the most amount that I can get, which I think was not. I mean, he can make a lot of money, so I don't think necessarily a couple extra million matters so much to what he's doing, but there's the idea of, like, that was very important in terms of the Players Association, in terms of the best player in the game, making sure that it wasn't this situation where he had to leave money on the table to, quote-unquote, make for a better team. You know, do you think, did that factor into it, too, a little bit?
I think a little bit. You got to understand, LeBron is different from a lot of other players in that he generates so much money off the court.
Exactly.
The money on the court, is it important? Sure, it's important to everybody, but it didn't drive him. And people will say, well, it doesn't drive him because he's unselfish. No, it doesn't drive him because he makes so much money out of it.
Right,
but see,
right.
When you look at a guy like Chris Bosh, and Miami Heat offered him $119 million to stay in Miami, of course he's going to take that money.
Sure.
He doesn't make any money out of the court.
Sure.
As far as the whole notion that, you know, the owners are winning because players are taking less money, blah, blah. Well, Carmelo didn't take less money. Carmelo took the money.
Yeah, he did.
You know, you know
I don't blame
players
him.
Players can take the money now. Don't get me wrong. They can take the money, you know. It's just that some chose not to, and in the end, they did get the money. Look, Chris Bosh didn't take the money first, but now he's getting the money now.
Right.
Dwayne Wade didn't take the money per se, but money he's going to take care of. Dwayne Wade will be a part of that organization until he's 65 years old.
Right.
You know,
he's Mr. Heat.
So the whole notion that players are now scaling back to making $2,000 a year, it's so far from the truth. The players are going to get their money, you know, if they want it. If they want it. Whereas the owners did win in that last collective bargaining agreement, you know, the players, the great players, if they want to get paid, they're getting paid. See, this was a strike against the high cost of mediocrity. That's what the owners don't like. You know, and it's funny, I say that, and then Chandler Parsons signs for $15 million a year.
Well, we will get into that in a little bit. I want to ask you, I like that, high cost of mediocrity. We'll definitely get back to that, and to Parsons. I want to stay with James for a little bit. Cavs owner Dan Gilbert, obviously, he famously set LeBron on fire on his way out of town. That pouty Comic Sans letter we all remember that the Cavs took down a few days before James returned. Now we've got this narrative here of Gilbert meeting with LeBron, apologizing, LeBron saying, you know, I made mistakes as well. Everyone here is older and wiser. We're all moving forward. We're going to have redemption, yada, yada, yada. Is all of that narrative a little overrated, or do you think that's a real thing and I'm just being too cynical?
You know, when he wrote that letter, I absolutely crucified him the next day because I just said, as the adult in the situation, you should have taken the high road. And I think, if in retrospect, he probably should have taken a walk around the block first. And
yes,
we all should when we get angry.
Or write that letter and then don't send till the next day, right?
No, Patrick, once you write that letter, you know you got to hit that press, that red button.
Write by hand, because then you actually have to walk it and mail it somewhere. This is the problem with technology. It's too easy to press
exactly.
Send now.
He needed to take a walk first, Patrick. He needed to take a walk. But let me just say something. In anger, sometimes, you know, we all say, not we all, but most people say or do things they wish they could have back.
He felt jilted. So I mean, he felt it was completely the jilted letter. You know, it's exactly how it read.
Exactly. And you also have to understand a couple other things. He laid out the red carpet for LeBron for 7 years.
Yes.
When they had to build a practice facility, they built it almost virtually next door to LeBron's house, even though it's 30 miles from Cleveland. You know, he relaxed rules with LeBron. He gave LeBron's buddies tickets. You know, he basically bent over backwards to appease LeBron and LeBron's buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Gilbert felt betrayed. And Gilbert, look, here's a guy who's made a ton of money in his other business, and he was never used to his employees or any employee of his treating him that way. So it was something new for a CEO.
Right. Okay? Wow, like my employee has as much power as I do in this situation.
Exactly. And there's one other thing. Gilbert knew he would be speaking to a choir if he sent this letter. He knew at that time that letter would go over well in Cleveland, and
You're right. You're right. We ridiculed it nationally. I did the same thing, but you're right. People in Cleveland were feeling the same way.
And as a matter of fact, even nationally, it went over well because the spirit at the time was against LeBron. And here's one other thing. Had the Cavaliers somehow been able to win without LeBron, nobody would be killing Gilbert for that letter. But what happened is the Cavs completely and utterly folded. All of a sudden, Gilbert looked foolish for the letter. Okay. So in any event, LeBron said, you know what? Hey, let's just sit and talk. And that's the thing. See, if people would just communicate, you know, particularly when time heals all, sit down, have a talk, you know, talk things out. How many things in politics and business, all sorts of strife that we see in the world, how much would be avoided if two individuals just sat down and talked it out? And that's what happened here.
See, so I'm too cynical. You're on board with this. You know, you look at, yeah, we've got the SI letter from LeBron. You know, he's dressed up. He looks like he's about to invite me to a wealth building seminar. Looks very mature. You know, it's complete change from, you know, when he did the decision, which I remember my biggest memory of the decision was that, wow, you know, LeBron James just looks and sounds really young. But of course, he was really young. Just on the court, he always looked older. I will put aside my cynicism. I'll go with you here. We should all have a chat in life. We should all let bygones be bygones. Forgiveness is good. What's that relationship going to be like now between LeBron and Gilbert, between LeBron and the franchise? Is it going to be as you described during the first go-around, where there's a lot of just, you said, bending over backwards for LeBron? Or is it going to be different? Is it going to be a little more professional, maybe?
I don't think it can help be anything but professional because LeBron is different.
Mm-hmm.
He's a more mature person.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a family man now. He's not hanging around his buddies. And I also think Dan Gilbert's probably different from the standpoint where he knows he made mistakes. You know, his team fell into the gutter. And I think also Cleveland is different. I think Cleveland now is ready to forgive. And not only that, Cleveland has a sense of security, whereas before they weren't necessarily so sure about LeBron. Now they know he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, wasn't, so I mean, the problem, a lot of the problem with the city's psyche as fans, but also even the organization back the first go around, is that they were always on that clock of like, oh my God, LeBron's going to leave. LeBron's going to leave. We don't build a contender, a championship team immediately, LeBron will leave. And it seemed like that led them to make a lot of bad short term moves, band aids on top of band aids. They never could quite get over the hump. They knew they had something great, but they were always kind of insecure about keeping it. It's different when you don't feel that way, isn't it?
Right, exactly. You got to understand that, you know, for Cleveland, such a battered city, image-wise, you know, people talk about, you know, nobody wants to go there, and the people who are there, if they had the opportunity to go someplace else, they would. You know, it's a rust belt, you know, cold, gray, whatever. You know, still, and also, the city's psyche, in terms of sports, you know, mm-hmm. the heartbreak, the drive, the fumble, you know, the Marlins, you know, you can go on and on. So I think the city sort of made peace with being a punching bag. But now, and then when they had a little bit of hope with LeBron at first,
right,
he bailed. You know, it didn't
And it's
hurt
like, here
me.
we
And
go
now, now
again,
I think
right?
it's, yeah, but, so now I think it's different. I think that there's a sense of security in town that eventually LeBron's going to win a championship. I think everybody is on board with that. Eventually, he's going to win one.
Sure.
You know,
It's different.
it's just a,
Yeah, it's different when, they got LeBron the first time around because of a lottery. This time around, LeBron chose them. Doesn't that make all the difference in some ways, psychologically?
well, the one thing, Patrick, one thing we all have to hit the brakes on. LeBron chose in because he's from Ohio. And if LeBron was from Philadelphia, if LeBron's from L.A., he's not with the Cavs right now. He didn't choose the Cavs. He
Chose home.
chose home.
Got
It's
it.
different.
So they, the Cavs. Let's talk about the Cavs here. They as you mentioned, they went into the gutter. They've been a mess since LeBron left. They had that incredible lottery luck we've talked about, but they also lost a lot of games. They churned through coaches. They just fired their GM. Was it all just the homecoming factor for LeBron choosing them as a landing spot, or was there more? Were there other reasons that they were more attractive than, say, the Lakers or Phoenix or some of these other teams that were clearing room in hopes of luring LeBron and maybe some of the other free agents too? Was it just the homecoming factor?
It is. LeBron was only going to go to one or two places. He's going to stay in Miami or go to Cleveland. Because you got to understand, his life is different. He's not all of a sudden hopscotching around the country with his family. It's just not going to happen. He's
Right.
different. His priorities are different. Plus, I'm sure legacy-wise, he would worry about how that looked. Joining one team and another for the sake of championships. And I think whereas championships drove him initially, now I think it's just peace of mind being back home. Sure, does he want to win a championship? Sure, but he's got two, and it's just like any human being. Once they get a couple, would they love more? Yes, but is it the driving number one force in their life? Sometimes, no longer, because he feels a little bit more secure about his place in history.
Sure.
So that's my feeling about those
That
two.
sounds also that sounds like the mark of an emotionally healthy person too. You know what I mean? Like not just being driven by winning sports championships in life. Like there is actually a lot more to life. I think sometimes as fans, we look at athletes and wonder, why don't they seem like, psychopathically hungry for championships? Well, would you be in that situation? Maybe not. So I'm glad you brought that up. Looking at the actual roster in Cleveland. Obviously, you mentioned Kyrie Irving. He's an all-star offensive player. Not the greatest defender, but amazing on offense. They've got, like you said, those last two number one picks, Anthony Bennett, who actually looks in shape, by the way. Andrew Wiggins, who people rave over his athleticism, his potential. They, like you said, they've got pieces like Tristan Thompson, Anderson Varejao. What are you looking at just basketball lenses on? When you look at that roster, what do you like about what they have? What do you think they need to do to get better, and how far can they go this year and over the next couple years now that LeBron is there?
Well, let me just take the whole aspect of the roster and how far they can go this year. We
Okay.
don't know because they're not done. They still have some more money to spend. They can make another trade or two, whether it's a major trade or a minor trade. They can still do a little bit to this roster, okay, to enhance it. But let's just talk in terms of where it is right now. Well, you have an all-star in Kyrie Irving, okay? That's just, that's where you start. You also have a big guy in Anderson Varejao, so that's a start. Now, two things about those two players. When LeBron was in Miami, he always had to be his team's best rebounder, and he always had to be his team's best playmaker. But now, because of Varejao and because of Kyrie Irving, he doesn't have to be anymore. Varejao can get 10 rebounds a game. Kyrie Irving handles the ball. So LeBron suddenly is relieved of those duties. All right. So that's how we have to see how it works. Because see, LeBron's not used to that. He kind of dominates the ball, although he's unselfish. He dominates the ball. So how will he, can he play off the ball suddenly? He's going to have to if he wants Kyrie Irving to develop into an all-star. Then you have, you've got Dion Waiters, who is, a good two guard, sometimes goes hot and cold in terms of the shot. But, the thing about Dion Waiters is that he bristled because Kyrie Irving dominated the ball so much, Dion Waiters thought he should have gotten more touches.
Now what
Now,
happens?
well, see, again, and that's exactly, how's that going to happen? How's that going to work now? One thing about NBA players and athletes in general, particularly when they're young, they want to prove themselves. And the one reason why they want to prove themselves, because they all want to get paid.
Exactly.
You take a guy like Deion Waiters. He wants to get paid. He's looking around and saying, well, wait a minute now. You know, he's got Kyrie, he had the ball, now LeBron's here. How am I going to get paid? So that's something to be, that's something for them to look at. But otherwise, I look at that roster. Andrew Wiggins is in a great spot because he's a number one pick who doesn't have to carry any load. He is so comfortable, and that it's such a comfortable entree to the NBA for him. Even though he's the so-called number one pick, he doesn't have any pressure on him. He can ride LeBron's cape, and he can sit and learn how to be a superstar. Nobody will be impatient with him because you've got LeBron, you've got Kyrie Irving. See, that's the problem with Andy.
They won't ask him to do anything that he can't do right now. They'll ask him to get better at the things he can get better at and do what you're good at, and that's it.
Exactly. And he can sit and learn from LeBron. And see, that was the problem with, you know, someone like Anthony Bennett. You know, he was number one pick. Sometimes being a number one pick is such a stigma. You come in and people expect something right away.
But right.
Anthony Bennett got hurt after he was drafted. You know, he was out of shape.
Had asthma, sleep apnea. Yeah, a lot of sort of like little health problems, but they all added up to being big problems.
Exactly. So, but anyway, long story short, I look at the roster, and I think they can win 50-55 games. And in the Eastern Conference...
That's pretty good.
You know,
that makes you a contender.
Hey,
you're right there.
Hey, you've got the game's best player. As long as you have the game's best player, if you go back in the history of the NBA, whoever had the NBA's best player was always in the mix for a championship.
You're right. You're right. I can't think of a single time when that wasn't the case. You talked about how this may not be the final roster here. Obviously, the big rumor is they'll be able to swing a deal for Kevin Love. Do you think that will happen? If so, do you think they'll put Wiggins in the deal? They're saying they're not going to trade Andrew Wiggins, but I'm just curious. Do you think that if push came to shove and they could get Love, they'd consider it?
Well, here's why I don't think they'll trade Andrew Wiggins. Number one, he's cheap. You've got young talent. You get Kevin Love, he's going to cost you $17 million a year. Now, look, this is a guy who's going to get 25 points and 12, 13, 14
would
rebounds.
Would fit great at next to LeBron. Next to LeBron. Can you imagine a Love LeBron outlet passes? It's going to be like that famous Dwayne Wade pass, you know, once every week.
Exactly. And you know what? If they decide to pull that trigger, I don't think anyone could argue. Because Wiggins, for all his promise, you're still weighing the unknown versus the known. You know what you're going to get from Kevin Love. You don't know what you're going to get from Andrew Wiggins.
And he's 19, right? Wiggins is 19?
He's 19.
Yeah, so he's going to hit his prime when LeBron is kind of like a graybeard. I mean, it's like a lot of years before Wiggins will really be whatever he's going to be.
And I think it comes down to what the Cavs want to do. If they want to go ahead and try to win right now, roll that dice, then I think they should pull the trade. Here, I think Wiggins, if he's with LeBron and's got no pressure, that is the ultimate situation for a young superstar to be. Okay, he can come in, play the Scottie Pippen role, and just really give a big help. So I really think it's about the Cavs, what they feel they need, and if they feel that, you know what, we're a pretty good team the way we are, we've got the game's greatest player, let's go ahead and take a shot. Oh, one other thing about Kevin Love before we drop him. Now, Kevin Love can come to the Cavaliers next summer, and they don't have to give up Andrew Wiggins.
That's true.
Okay, he can come there as a free agent. Why would you sacrifice Andrew Wiggins when give the guy a year, see what he's going to be?
Yeah, and
then next summer, you go to Kevin Love and say, hey, man, hop aboard.
I mean, yeah, and at some point with Minnesota, the pressure's going to be on them. Okay, do we want to just let Kevin Love walk or try to get something for him? So maybe it's smart to wait a little bit. Let them start to feel the heat. Maybe you can make a deal you don't have to throw in Wiggins. Maybe you can just send Waiters and Bennett or, you know, some combination of other guys. And you keep Kyrie, you keep LeBron, you keep Wiggins, and you get Love. That wouldn't be bad.
Well, that's what I would do. Now, the risk here, of course, is that Kevin Love next summer will have options other than the Cavs.
Right.
Plus,
and Minnesota will have options and deal him somewhere else.
Yeah, and the Timberwolves have his bird rights, which means Kevin Love can come to Cleveland next summer without Cleveland giving anything up. But he can't make the most money coming with that rock. Like, that's what Dwight Howard did.
Right.
He didn't do a sign and trade. He went directly from the Lakers to the Rockets and left $30 million on the table.
Right. Which is what Carmelo did not do. Carmelo didn't want to do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which I don't blame them. That's 30, 50. That's whole, we're talking about a lot of money. Even when you have millions, 30 and 50 million is still a lot. So I don't blame anyone for that. One little part of this Cleveland story, before we move on from Cleveland, that I haven't read a lot about yet and I'm super intrigued by is their new coach, Dave Blatt. I don't know a lot about him because he's been coaching overseas for forever, it seems like. I do know he coached in Russia at one point. He coached in Israel. I think he might have even coached the Russian Olympic team. I'm not sure. Because I seem to remember Coach K, of all people, basically insinuating that he was some kind of traitor to America for coaching Russia. Do you remember what I'm talking about? And what do you know about Blatt?
Well, first of all, you are correct in all of the above. He just had an unusual journey to the NBA. As a matter of fact, unprecedented journey for someone who, you know, was an average basketball player in the United States. You know, wanted to coach, couldn't really break into the NBA or college system, and took the first flyer he could to go coach overseas, and never really came back. You know, he was coaching in Russia, mostly in Israel, where his team played very well. And the funny thing is this: the NBA would always go scout these international games, looking for players, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Well, some of these teams took notice of a coach. You know, and all of a sudden they started scouting him.
Really?
And all of a sudden, and so they said, well, wait a minute now. Here's a guy we wondered. We love his system. We love the way, you know, his teams play. And he's playing with so-called inferior players compared to the NBA players. Mm-hmm. We wonder how he could do, you know, in the NBA. And then he was, you know, once that was out there, you know, he was all on board, gung-ho. He had a couple you know, chances that really didn't fall through, and then this kind of fell into his lap. Now, also, right now, he might be the luckiest coach in the world.
Absolutely. How happy is he? Get the best player.
Let me tell you something. First of all, who might be the unluckiest coach in the game right now? It might be John Calipari. John Calipari, 2 months ago, was offered the Cavaliers' job. And something like ridiculous, like $7 million a season.
Oh, boy.
He turned it down. Okay? Now, then Blatt comes in as, you know, the second choice. He gets the job. And then, what, 3 weeks after he gets the job, he's going to coach LeBron James.
Yeah. I don't like to ever feel sorry for John Calipari because he has it pretty good. But, yeah, that probably does sting a little bit.
You know, it might be, how can I compare it? Who was the guy who turned down the chance to star in MASH, McClain Stevenson, and then MASH became this big, you know, TV
right.
hit? Well, look, let's not feel sorry for John Calipari. He knows where his next meal is coming from, okay?
Sure.
But
yeah, this is when
Tom Selleck
said, I can't be in Raiders of the Lost Ark because I got to go film Magnum P.I. episodes. It's kind of
exactly.
like that. Tom Selleck did fine. He still got plenty to eat. But Harrison Ford did a little better.
Exactly. So if you're John Calipari and you've already won a national championship in Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
okay, you don't have to deal recruiting or anything like that. You would have the chance to coach Kyrie Irving, Andrew Wiggins, and LeBron James. Come on now.
Man.
And hold it. Make a lot of money at doing it.
Yeah, he's making a lot more than they paid Blatt, right?
Exactly. So, again, when you look back at that, that might be one of the all-time, and like I said, John Calipari, he's successful, he's doing well where he is, but that might be one of the all-time coaching mistakes in hindsight.
Yeah, not even on the floor. So far the offseason register, you know, Cleveland up one, Dave Blatt like plus 100, John Calipari minus 100. Let's move over to the team LeBron left for a second, Miami. You know, four finals, two championships over 4 years. It's pretty, pretty, pretty good. Pat Riley's a proven GM. Spoelstra seems like a very solid coach, well-run organization, very stable. But still LeBron left. And we've talked about him wanting to go home. But also, you know, most of what I've read and heard, nobody thought it was totally crazy from a basketball standpoint. Not for LeBron necessarily to leave end up in Cleveland, but just to leave Miami. I want to give you three factors that people have talked about in terms of negatives for Miami. You tell me what you think their importance was in terms of LeBron deciding to leave. So number one, the Spurs shellacking them in the finals. I mean, it was not a competitive finals after the first game. It wasn't even close. Number two, Dwayne Wade, looking a lot like he has the knees of Michael Jordan was he, when he was here in Washington for those comeback seasons. And number three, Pat Riley had a slightly off key, very Pat Riley like, everyone suck it up, nobody panic, you can't handle the truth off-season media address that some people have said rub LeBron or his people the wrong way. Those three factors, where do you rank those? Were they important too, in terms of how this all went down?
I think the third one wasn't a factor at all.
Really,
At
that's just
all.
media blabber, basically.
At all. At all. First of all, it's funny how people can interpret the relationship between Pat Riley and LeBron James, and they're not privy to it.
Well,
LeBron
hey
James has
now,
all the,
that's what we do here in the press. Come on.
LeBron James has all the respect in the world for Pat
Sure.
Riley. And Pat Riley is known to do those things for, to basically charge up his players.
Right.
So, no. To me, that's a non-issue.
Right. Okay.
The second one, I think, might have been somewhat of an issue in terms of Dwayne Wade and his health. I think LeBron was probably wondering, okay, where is my number two guy going to come from?
Sure.
Because I don't think Dwayne starting next year or maybe the year after is going to be a number two guy.
And LeBron had to
Okay.
play a lot of minutes this year. I mean, he looked gassed in the finals too. It looked like that first year in Miami where he had to play sort of too much, carry too much of a load, and he looked really tired against the Mavericks. I'm wondering, I mean, we
Right.
think of LeBron as this sort of indestructible basketball cyborg because he looks like one and he plays like one. He's been incredibly durable and healthy his whole career, but he is, you know, even he is getting up in miles on his knees, on his ankles. At some point, I think he's going to want to reduce his workload and pick his spots a little more. And maybe, like you're saying, with Wade, who's a little bit farther along in terms of not being able to be healthy all the time, I can't see why he wouldn't look at that and think, like you said, wait a second. Not only who's my number two, but do I have to then do so much more heavy lifting on a night-to-night basis? You know, when it's game 62 or it's game 42 and it's a long season, who's going to be there? And I need a night off or I need a night to coast.
Right. And then the number one issue you raised, I think that was mild. And here's why I say that. The Spurs, yeah, they did handle Miami Heat, but I think the Spurs just simply caught fire,
Yeah, you think it was
at
more
the
that?
right time.
It was more about the
I think
Spurs than
it,
about the Heat.
yeah, I think they just kind of caught fire. And okay, if LeBron had stayed in Miami, there was no guarantee that the Spurs were going to be back in the finals next year. So
True.
maybe it's Oklahoma City. Maybe LeBron would have a better matchup with like the Clippers or somebody. So I don't think he was scared off by the Spurs or anything like that because Miami still had a heck of a year. They destroyed Indiana. They just ran up against a team that A, matched up with them pretty well and B, caught fire. You can't blame them for that.
So you don't think he was thinking, boy, like we're Miami here, we're done. Like this dynasty's done. Like we just got exposed in a way that we can't bounce back from. You don't think he was thinking that?
Well, I mean, again, if you look at it from just the NBA Finals, then I think he would have to look at that. But that was only against the NBA Finals against one team,
Right. It's a
which
snapshot. It's a small snapshot.
had LeBron gone back to Miami, looking at a 60-win team and a title contender. So I don't think now, if you want to say long term, yeah,
Sure.
I think LeBron probably had concerns, but then he could help those long-term concerns by just simply signing a contract that would have given him a one-year escape clause. Simple as that.
So you could, yeah, could have stayed and done this all over again next year or 2 years from now or something like that. Like I mentioned at the start of the podcast, you know, LeBron, we've been talking about him, he was the first domino. Everyone was kind of waiting on his decision. And since then, we've had what's been a pretty crazy offseason just in a few days. So I want to talk about some of the other moves. Get into some draft stuff. You know, a lot of people, you and I joked about this on email. I'm kind of an NBA nerd. I mean, not a lot of people know this because I don't write about it a lot, but, you know, I watch a lot of Summer League, which I think is a sign of a sickness, maybe. And I probably watch more Summer League than anybody who's not being paid to watch Summer League probably should. But let's start in my neck of the woods here in Washington. The weekend news absolutely stunned me. Paul Pierce, Washington Wizards. Do you like that signing? And does Pierce have anything left going into what's his 17th season?
I don't mind the signing, and here's why. They lost Trevor Ariza. Okay.
Had and a really good year last year, by the way. I don't know how many people watch the Wizards regularly. I watched almost every game. Extremely efficient, productive player, great defender, good team guy. I was sad to see him go. So just, yeah. Goodbye, Trevor Ariza. Good luck. Enjoyed watching you.
I'm totally with you on that. I think Trevor Ariza had a good 3 months. And all of a sudden, people forgot how he was the previous year.
That's true.
But anyway, going
that
back
also
to
is true. Yeah. He definitely, you know, if you look at his production or his career, Trevor Ariza is like the ultimate like contract year guy in NBA standards. He's had two great seasons both times, contract year.
You're totally, totally correct. And that's why you don't invest in guys like that. But anyway, getting back to Paul Pierce, I'm okay with it because, yes, he's old, but they don't need him. If Otto Porter is capable of playing next season the way he's playing in the summer league right now, they don't have to lean on Paul Pierce. And the other reason why I think it's okay is Paul Pierce, you know, he's a leadership guy. I think I'm not saying that he is the greatest leader in the league and or whatever, but he's a good guy to have in a young locker room. You know, most the Wizards are a relatively young team. And so I think he can only, he brings a lot of some playoff experience for a team that's really trying to make the playoffs a regular trip. And so I think a small short-term investment in Paul Pierce is probably money well spent.
I always feel with Pierce too, and something I've always liked about watching his game is to me, I'll make an analogy. So like, you know, sometimes in like among actors and actresses or among people, you know, there are people when they're 30, they look 45, but then when they're 60 or 70, they still look 45. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like as a basketball player, he always had kind of an old man game, even when he was young. So even when I watch him now, he still looks like Paul Pierce to me. Like, he can't defend the way he used to, but he doesn't look totally diminished. Like, he's crafty. He plays with angles. I mean, his three-pointer is like an eighth-grader set shot, but he's a great shooter. I mean, I feel like if anyone can still be productive, as long as you know, manage his minutes in a 17th season, I feel like Pierce is one of those guys. Like, he's not relying on explosiveness the way some guys do, and then they just fall off a cliff when they lose it.
Yeah, and I think for all those reasons you mentioned, first of all, he doesn't have a great body. You know, he never did.
No,
even when he came
he really
to the
didn't.
NBA. He's like a pudgy guy. But you're right, he plays an old-school, on-the-floor game, and those players are always the last to leave. You know, the players who aren't above-the-rim players, guys who survive with smarts and guile and can hit the mid-range jump shot.
Yeah, he seems to get where he wants to go. He's not like the flashiest dribbler, but you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Andre Miller, also like 37 on the Wizards, who had an old man game 10 years ago and is still like shockingly effective. And it reminds me a little bit of Tim Duncan too, like all three of those guys to me. Like, at their position, you know, point guard, small forward, power forward slash center, they're all the same guy in that sense. I mean, I'm not trying to say they're all the same level of skill or accomplishment, but they're those kinds of guys that seem to age really well because they never relied on being young in the first place.
Absolutely. And Tim Duncan, I think, is a great comparison. You know, both those guys came in the league roughly around the same time.
They did.
And so they know how to stay effective. I guess that's the word. They know how to stay effective. They know how to stretch their careers. They know how to take care of themselves. Although, again, Paul Pierce doesn't have the greatest body, but he manages to keep himself in good enough shape to play at the age he is right now.
Now, he left the Nets. You know, Brooklyn reportedly didn't want to pay all the extra luxury tax it would have taken to resign him. Because they're so far over the tax, you know, it would have been something like they would have paid him $9 or $10 million, and we had to pay like 10 or 15 more million just to keep him around. And they're coming off a season where they reportedly lost something like $170 million. Now, I don't always trust the accounting that goes into figuring team losses because it's kind of dubious, and teams are always crying poor when they're not. But we know what Brooklyn's been doing the last year or two. It's been completely mortgage the future, win now, spend tons of money, pay whatever luxury tax we have to do, you know, collect veterans, and all that resulted in a second-round playoff exit last year. Then we had this really weird, sudden, and somewhat ugly departure of Jason Kidd, first-year head coach. He ends up in Milwaukee. Look, when you look at it, what's going on with the Nets? And are they just going to be stuck in purgatory the next couple of years?
I think with the Nets, I think some of their issues began when they made the move from New Jersey to Brooklyn. The general manager, Billy King, and also the owner, Mikhail Progeroff, they didn't want to bring a bad team to Brooklyn because there was the fear that, it's a new place and maybe, you're in Knicks country and you better be good. You can't be the same old Nets. You'll never get a fan base, a core. So they made the trade for Deron Williams. And then they gave Deron Williams power. They said, okay, Deron, we got to keep you happy because he was a free agent that summer.
I
And
remember.
Deron Williams says, okay, yeah, Deron Williams says, I want some help right now. So what they did was they made even at the time, I thought it was a stupid trade. They gave an unprotected number one pick to get Jarrett Wallace
Oh
from Portland.
God. I yes. Yes, it was a
Okay.
stupid trade at the time, but it became stupider over time.
Oh, but hold it. It gets even dumber. Jarrett Wallace was a free agent, and so to justify giving up a number one pick, basically compounding the mistake, they gave Jarrett Wallace a contract that was like for $45 million. Okay. Now let's look back. That number one pick, guess who that became? Damian Lillard for the Portland
Ouch.
Trailblazers.
Who
Thank you very much.
I would
All
not
right.
trade straight up for Deron Williams right now. I don't think
Thank
anybody
you.
would.
Thank you. So now they had Deron Williams, Jarrett Wallace, and then they started adding, they had Brook Lopez, and they brought in Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And then they made the big trade with Atlanta to get Joe Johnson, and that poisonous contract was paying Joe Johnson like he was a Hall of Famer, all-star,
Right.
like an Olympic team member. So they said, look, we have to win right away. And Mikhail Prokhorov is worth $44 billion. He doesn't care about the luxury tax,
Sure.
So anyway, long story short, the Nets wanted to win right away, but when they did that, they put a cap on their growth. In other words, they were filled with players who had already maxed out.
Right.
Deron Williams is not getting better. Joe Johnson's not getting better. Kevin Garnett not getting
In
better.
fact,
All these guys are
these
not.
guys are only going to decline, and some of them are so old, they're going to decline precipitously.
Right, and as they decline, you're still not. You don't have a lottery pick, okay? To sort of change your team. You got Brook Lopez, and he's a good young
He
player,
is
but
when
he's
he's
off
healthy.
coming off an injury. So you're not replenishing the team with good young players. You're just trying to patch together at this point.
It's
But
band-aids on
that's where the Nets
band-aids.
are, and that's where the Nets are.
It's not a good place to be. Moving across town, the other sort of big free agent people are waiting on, Carmelo Anthony, resigned with the Knicks. He even wrote a letter. I guess that's the new thing you do now. And we talked about before, did not want to leave that. I think it was about $50 million on the table he would have taken to be a free agent and sign somewhere else because the Knicks could pay him more via bird rights. Like I said, I don't blame him. But looking at the Knicks, in theory, they're now being run by Phil Jackson. When Dolan's in the picture, you never know. But in theory, Phil Jackson's in charge. I like that they picked up one of my personal favorite players, Jose Calderon, to play point guard. Not a great defender, but like just really solid otherwise, fun to watch. I think he'll make their games more enjoyable next year. On the whole, I have to ask, it's the biggest market. The fans are always thinking they're one year away. I mean, to me, Knicks fans remind me very much of Washington's NFL team fans, that every year they're disappointed. Every offseason they get excited and they think they're back in championship contention, and they're even more disappointed the next year, but they keep coming back. Do they have real reason now to be optimistic? Or is this just basically going to be the same old Knicks year after year? Does Phil Jackson really make a difference going forward?
I don't think they have any reason to feel optimistic in the short term because I just think the roster right now is filled with players who you will not see in another year. It's a roster in transition.
Okay.
And everybody knows that this upcoming season is a throwaway season where you got a bunch of players who are there just filling, biding their time until next summer when the Knicks tell all of them goodbye, with the exception of Carmelo and Calderon and maybe one or two others who aren't making that much money. Tim Hardaway Jr.
Sure.
So it's one of those seasons that's, where you're, like an airplane, you're, you're before you land, you're just caught in a holding pattern.
I see what you're saying.
So now the big question is the big picture. I think then it comes down to a couple of things. Number one, how much faith do you have in Phil Jackson as a general manager? Because we don't know what he's like as a general manager. We know what he's like as a coach, and we only know what he's like as a coach when he's got Michael Jordan, Shaq, Kobe, blah, blah, blah. So we don't know what he's like as a general manager. The second thing is, well, actually, there are three things. The second thing is, how many players are dying to be Carmelo Anthony's teammate? How many players want to play in New York? I think money will have a lot to do with that, and the Knicks have, you know, they've shown that they will spend money, not wisely, but they'll spend money.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, maybe some players don't want to be Carmelo's teammate. Maybe some players, you know, don't want to live in New York. It's not for everybody.
And the third thing, are you saying so guys don't want to just watch Carmelo dribble, 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 shoot an 18-foot pull-up? That's not appealing?
You kind of caught up on that a little bit, huh, Patrick?
Yeah, the other thing is, Carmelo, he's such a great scorer. I mean, I really admire and appreciate his level of skill and his size. But I also find him just personally to be one of the most boring players to watch in the last 10 years. Like, I almost cannot stomach watching Knicks games just because I don't like watching him play. And it's nothing, again, nothing against his skill. I don't think he's one of these guys where it's like, how dare you give him a max contract? No, he's absolutely a max contract guy. He's such a gifted scorer. But the way he scores, while, again, skillful, is just dull to me personally. Anyway, that's just an aside. Get back to what you were saying. You have the Phil factor, the Carmelo factor. What's the third factor, big picture, for the Knicks going forward?
Well, it's the Dolan factor.
Oh, gosh. How could I? I couldn't even ask you. I should have known.
Do I need to say any more? I think he's one of those guys who has good intentions, but everything he touches turns to lead.
I'm telling you, he's the Dan Snyder of NBA owners.
Absolutely. And Patrick, let me go back to Carmelo.
Please.
He is so gifted of a scorer that you have to, you know, it's like a damn if you do, damn if you don't have him on your team, because he causes so many problems for the defense, but yet he hasn't demonstrated the ability to make his teammates better, whatever. Here's the thing. Carmelo has never had, and you can go back in his teams in Denver and here with the Knicks, he's never had that one teammate to put him in check. He's never had that one teammate that he really, really respected. He's never had that one teammate who was better than Carmelo. And particularly if that teammate was a point guard. You know, if a teammate was a point guard who handled the ball and made the decisions where the ball goes, okay, and he was good, Carmelo would have to respect him. I go back to when the Lakers had Shaq and Kobe and those two players are feuding. The problem with the Lakers then is they didn't have a good enough point guard who could determine who gets the ball. That way, those two players aren't fighting over the ball. That way, the point guard says, no, Kobe, I'm not giving it to you. I'm giving it to Shaq. You see? But they never had a point guard who could make the decisions for them, and therefore they feuded about the ball.
Yeah, that sounds so basic, almost like how things happen in pickup, but I think you're right. Sometimes it just comes down to that basic thing. Who's going to control the ball?
And Carmelo doesn't have that point guard who will say, no, 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 Carmelo, I gave it to you in 18 consecutive trips. You're not going to get it in 19. Or something like that. You know what I'm trying to say.
Right. I know what you're saying. If we stay in the East, was Miami smart to resign Chris Bosh to that huge deal, add Luol Deng, and basically try to remain competitive instead of blowing stuff up, starting over, you know, becoming Orlando/Philadelphia?
I think what Miami is doing now, basically with Chris Bosh signing and also with the, you know, the pending Dwayne Wade signing, I think they're repaying the championships.
Yeah.
You know, the bill has come in. Mm-hmm. And I think that there was quietly an agreement made with both of those players that if LeBron leaves, that they would be
we'll
taken
take care,
care
of you.
Of.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that's how, that's so kind of that's, the whole Miami Mafia thing that the guys down there talk about, right? Like, that's sort of like what the organization's reputation, you know, is like, you come here and give your all, we take care of you. A guy like Udonis Haslem. I assume that I'll be seeing Udonis Haslem in Miami Heat broadcasts for the next 30 years, you know, doing something for them.
Yeah, and so you have to understand, other players see that, and they like how the Miami Heat is taking care of their own. Pat Riley knows it. These are signals being sent out. Yeah, you're overpaying for Chris Bosh, don't get me wrong.
You know, Pat I Riley agree, but I like, signals. By the way, I like Bosh. I just want to throw that in really quick. I actually think he's a little bit of an undervalued player at this point. Now, maybe his production versus new salary isn't quite undervalued, but I just think in terms of his reputation among fans, I think he was very deferential with LeBron on the team and Wade, and he did what needed to be done. But I actually like him. I think he will actually kind of show a little more of his game this year. But I'm sorry to
Well, I,
interrupt.
no, no, no. You brought up a good point, and I'd like to emphasize that a little bit. Chris Bosh, I think, is probably going to be. I would compare his season next season to Amari Stoudemire's first year with the Knicks. When Amari Stoudemire went from Phoenix to New York, all of a sudden, he didn't have, well, Steve Nash had. Was Steve Nash there? No, he was gone. Yeah, Steve Nash was there. He didn't have Steve Nash anymore, and people wondered whether or not Amari could,
Still
be the
be
man.
Amari.
Well, he had. If you remember, Patrick, he had a heck of a first year with the Knicks.
He was
This
great
is this
until his
is.
knees went bad. He was great. You're right.
Hello now, Amari Stoudemire carried that team. I can see Chris Bosh sort of in that same role, where now that he's been free from LeBron, everybody said LeBron had blah blah blah. Chris Bosh can here with the Knicks.
The Bulls land Pau Gasol. Not the headliner move, but a big move. They also brought over a European big man whose name I cannot yet pronounce, but it's supposed to be one of the best shooters and overseas prospects out there. Their fingers are crossed that Derrick Rose will actually return for good now, stay healthy, maybe at least be 80%, 85% of what he was. Do you like what they're doing? And should we all consider Chicago now to be the favorite to get to the finals out of the East?
Well, the Bulls failed to get the player they needed. They didn't really need Pau Gasol. Pau Gasol doesn't fill their most desperate void, and that's a big time scorer at either the swing position, that's big guard or small forward. They didn't get that guy, okay? And there was nobody else out there who could even come close. So I think they started saying, well, you know what? Let's strengthen our strengths.
Reinforce strength. That's what the military generals always talk about.
Exactly. Let's get Pau Gasol. Well, Mike Dunleavy, those guys. Now, there are a couple other factors here. Doug McDermott. Now, he, the big time scorer in college, look, if Doug McDermott is the NBA Rookie of the Year this coming season, then what is that going to, that tells you that they didn't need Carmelo Anthony that much. That's going to tell you, because Doug McDermott can only get NBA Rookie of the Year by being a big-time scorer. So if he comes in and he has a seamless transition to the NBA, and that comes with, with some doubts, obviously, then that is unbelievable news for the Bulls, because they're not paying Doug McDermott Carmelo Anthony money. And
That's
yet
right.
they're getting a guy who's probably scoring, 18 points a game and giving them some 3-point range and things like that. But anyway, let's assume that, like all rookies, he's going to struggle. Then the burden comes on to the usual suspects. Derrick Rose, is he going to be, the player we think he was, back 3 years ago? Joakim Noah, hopefully he hasn't tapped out. Taj Gibson, Pau Gasol. And then, you've got guys like Mirotić, the player whose name you couldn't
Mirotić, there
pronounce.
you go. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, here's a guy who was a good shooter over in Europe for a few years, MVP of a couple seasons, but he's untested. We don't know. But McDermott, Mirotić, if those guys can combine, and also Tony Snell, who, by the way, is having a good summer. And of course, since you watch Summer League all the time, you
Yes, I
know
saw
Tony
Tony Snell,
Snell.
a second-year guy, came
Exactly.
out of New Mexico. He struggled a
Exactly.
little bit as a rookie because I think he had, like most rookies, asked to do too much at times, especially with Chicago, where just scoring was a struggle for everybody there. He does, yeah. He looks great. Looks like he's gonna
So.
like between him, McDermott, and Mirotić, I feel like can the three of them approximate what they would have gotten from Carmelo? Maybe, He might get
Exactly.
enough scoring and shooting out of those guys to make it all right.
Well, yeah, but you know what I feel about committees versus one? Committees don't scare the other defense.
No,
The one.
it's like having committee quarterback committee in football. It doesn't
Exactly.
work.
Exactly. Committees to me are like three guys who aren't good enough to do what one guy can do.
Right.
You know. But look, if you're the Bulls, what position were you in? Were you gonna throw some money at like Lance Stephenson? I'm not so sure about that.
Right.
So, you know, they decided to take this route, you know, maybe it helps, who knows? And you know, we'll see how it goes. It again, a lot depends on Derrick Rose now. You
Yeah, I
know,
think it
he's
all depends on Derrick Rose. And you know, again, being in Washington, having seen what multiple knee injuries did to Gilbert Arenas, I worry about Rose, you know, because he was, it seemed like so much of his game was based on that explosiveness. I just worry, will he get it
You
back?
know what? I wouldn't compare the two because when Derrick Rose came back last year, I know he only played about 7 games or whatever, he was going to the rim hard,
You know, he
and
was, you're right.
he looked fantastic. And you got to understand, this injury he has, this most recent injury, is nowhere compared to what he had before, and it's not the same injury. So I think Derrick Rose, from a physical standpoint, I think he'll be fine. The only problem he had last season before he got re-injured was his timing. His shot was off.
Yeah,
Okay,
he seemed a
there
little
was a
out of
little
sorts,
floater.
a little
Yeah,
rusty.
but he was getting to the rim like it was nothing.
Sure.
So I don't worry about him physically. I worry two things on the Bulls. Number one, can he stay healthy? And then the other thing is, how quickly is it going to take for him to get his timing back?
Right. That could be a quarter of a season, third of a season, half a season. I would imagine by come playoff time, if he stays healthy, it'll be back. I'm not sure it would
They'll
take the
take
whole
that.
year.
They'll take that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. As a fan of basketball, I really hope so because he's so fun to watch. Before we move to the West, just in the East, any teams that you see as sleepers, or did someone make an under the radar move that you really like so far?
Ah, boy. I mean, I don't think any team can come make a major move. I don't think anyone's going to overtake like the Pacers or the Bulls, you know, Toronto, you know.
They brought the band back, basically, right? They brought the
Yeah,
gang back.
but that doesn't, they didn't get better. They
Right.
just brought their same guy back. So I don't see them making any kind of huge leap. They'll maintain. I guess if I had to throw a couple teams out there, you have to be aware of the Wizards because their most important players all have upside. You know, John Wall, Brad
Bradley Beal.
Beal. You know, so those guys are only going to, that might be the starting backcourt for the East next year. Well, not LeBron's going to be there, but it could be the starting backcourt in the All-Star game for the East next year if those guys really have good years. You know, if you look at the Miami Heat, I think they're going to be a 50-win team. You
Yeah,
know,
I don't think they're
I
going to have
guess
a
that would be a
massive drop
surprise.
off in the regular season. I agree.
Yeah, if that's a surprise, okay, whatever, but you know. And then you have a team like, say, you know, the Bobcats, who were on the up and up. And again, they're playing in the East, so you have to take their win total with a grain of salt. But they're a young team, and the nucleus is, you know, on the up and up. So you have to assume, you know, they'll get better. Al Jefferson had a good year for them. He's more of the veteran, but still, you have to assume they'll get up. But I don't see any team in the East like the way the Golden State Warriors were 2 years ago, the way the Portland Trailblazers were last year. I don't see any team in the East, like when we wake up on Christmas Day, they're going to be leading the East. I don't see that.
Let's move to the West. It seems to only get more insanely competitive every year. I don't know how this happens, but it does seem that way. If LeBron had gone west, it would have been more so. I'm really intrigued by what happened with Houston because they put a lot of chips on the table to land Bosch, who probably would have fit amazingly well into their roster. So they ship out Jeremy Lin, a draft pick. They basically get nothing back. They get rid of Omar Asik, you know, really fine defensive center. They let, or maybe baited, I'm not sure, the Mavericks, their in-state rivals, into snatching away Chandler Parsons, who we mentioned earlier, maybe that's too much for him, but he's a pretty good player too. And all they really have to show at the end is Trevor Ariza, as we mentioned, nice player, 3-and-D guy. He's not Chris Bosh. Do you think they're going to be okay this coming year, or do you feel like Daryl Morey, their GM, you know, beloved by analytic people, with good reason, it seems like a pretty clever GM. Did he finally outsmart himself this summer?
Well, I think if you're talking about Houston in a negative light, the only thing you're saying is, well, they may win 50 games as opposed to 54 games because they're going to win 50 games.
Yeah.
you got to understand, as long as they have James Harden and Dwight Howard, and those guys are still in their prime, then I think you got to like Houston. And I like Patrick Beverley. I like the dog in him.
I do, too.
I like the dog, Patrick. I mean,
and know, they need that because that's one thing that Howard and Harden don't have is a whole lot of dog in them. Harden comically so on defense. But Howard, you know, unfortunately, with the exception of that one playoff run in 2009 where he just was a defensive terror, I don't see the same kind of ferocity out of him. And I like him, but, you know, it doesn't seem like he has that. Beverly has it.
But if you're asking me, have they taken a step forward to a championship? Obviously not. They're, you know, at best, they're the same team next year as they were last year. And we're assuming that Ariza gives them everything that Parsons gave them, okay? At best, they're the same team. And Ariza, by the way, averaged, what, 17, 18 points a game for the Wizards down the stretch? I think it might even be more than that. Might have been 20 points.
He was awesome playing off John Wall. If you can play off in terms of just spotting up, coming in transition, hitting threes, occasionally taking one dribble to the hoop and finishing. You know, if he can do that next to Harden, you know, I can see him definitely having the same kind of production in Houston. So I think that's a solid pickup. I don't mean to slide Ariza when I say that's the only thing they got this offseason. It's just I know they were going for bigger fish. As a consolation prize is all right, but boy, Bosh would have looked good there.
Yeah, well, now you got to understand they were going after LeBron too,
right? And Carmelo, they put him in Jeremy Lin's jersey when they brought him in to talk to him.
Yeah, and by the way, after they get LeBron, they even reach even further and try to get Dirk Nowitzki down there.
Right, because don't Maury and Cuban kind of have a rivalry, right? They kind of like each other.
Exactly, and so when they struck out on those two, you know, now they're down to, you know, keeping Chandler Parsons at $15 million a year or getting Trevor Ariza at a more economical $8 million a year.
Right. It's kind of like the Wizards decided. Right. Yeah, it's like the Wizards being like, we could keep Ariza at this money or we could pay a lot less for Paul Pierce and keep flexibility.
Exactly.
I can understand
it. Exactly.
Let's go to the Mavericks, by the way. I feel like quietly, I wonder what their ceiling is. You know, they brought back Tyson Chandler. They added Parsons. I mean, I think people forget, but they pushed the Spurs probably the hardest in the playoffs last year. And personally, I think they actually might have the best coach in the league in Rick Carlisle. If he's not number one, he's like number 1A or 1B. Is there any chance, looking at the Mavericks, because they struck out on the big free agents the last couple of years, can they sneak back into the finals the way they did in 2011?
You know, Patrick, you brought up one thing about the Mavs, and this is the reason why I think it spurred all their moves. They feel that because they took the Spurs to Game 7, they're a lot closer to the finals than people realize. Really. And that's why they said, okay, let's give Chandler Parsons $15 million a year. Let's bring back Tyson Chandler, even though, you know, he may not be able to play 82 games, you know, anymore. Let's do this. Because we're right there. Now, I don't know whether they are or they aren't. I think they might be reading a little bit too much into that seven-game series with the Spurs. You know, maybe it was a matter of just matchups and things like that. But look, if you're Mark Cuban, you know you're only going to have Dirk Nowitzki in his prime for, you know, maybe a couple more years. You have to roll the dice. You have to see. This is the issue that the Lakers were in with Kobe. You know, Kobe, they only have Kobe for 2 more years, but they can't help him. Well, Mark Cuban said, you know what? I'm going to try to, you know, take Dirk out in style. Let's see if we can put together a team that is somewhat similar to the one in 2011 that won. We've got Monte Ellis coming off a very good year. You know, Tyson Chandler's back. You can spread the floor with Chandler Parsons. Let's give it a shot. And why not?
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, they're going to be like a lot of Western teams. They may not beat each other up, but they're going to be really entertaining while they do it. Another team that's super entertaining, but also has aspirations of being more than that, Golden State. Steve Kerr is a new coach, heavily rumored to be chasing Kevin Love. Don't seem to want to necessarily give up Klay Thompson to get him, but I don't know if their feelings will change. What do you think happens there? Do you think Kerr makes a smooth transition to coaching? You know, we saw him as a general manager already. Obviously, he's pretty well respected in terms of his knowledge of the league, but he hasn't coached before. Do you think that'll work okay? Because there was also a pretty weird and not so great exit for Mark Jackson. I don't know how the players feel about all that too. Or could things go sideways in Golden State more than people realize?
Well, I know that Steve Kerr is a very even-keeled guy who's used to playing with superstars. He had Tim Duncan, he
Michael
had
Jordan.
Michael Jordan, whatever. So he's used to dealing with those type of players. And he's a guy, as a role player, as a career role player, he knows what it's like to be a role player. See, sometimes that helps when you know how to deal with both types of players. And I think that will aid him in this job. Now, he has decided to put his status on the line very quickly here by hinting that he is going to give Harrison Barnes as much, if not more, playing time than Andre Iguodala.
Really?
Now,
Oh, that is interesting.
I can see why he's doing this. When the Warriors signed Andre Iguodala last year, Harrison Barnes went into a tank. You know, they brought in a guy and paid him good money to play Harrison Barnes' position. And Harrison Barnes was in the funk all last year. He underachieved last year. He took a step back.
He did.
And I can understand. He felt bad, you know. Here he is trying to break out. And what did I tell you about young players? They all wanted to get paid.
And he had a great
Here he
playoffs the season before. He was kind of coming into his
Exactly.
own.
Right. And so all of a sudden taking a step back because they, you know, when management goes out and signs someone and gives them $12 million a year to play your position, they're sending you a message. But anyway, Steve Kerr says, you know what? I like Harrison Barnes. We need to get his head back into the game. We need him to either help us or be attractive enough to go somewhere else in the trade. So I'm going to give him playing time. I thought it was a brilliant move. Now, whether or not he carries it through, we'll see. But you have to get Harrison Barnes' head back. He's got to feel as good about himself as Draymond Green feels about himself. You know, yeah. Anyway, as far as how Steve Kerr will be as a coach, hey, as long as, you know, the Splash Brothers are on board with everything he's saying, I said that's pretty much 75% of the fight right there.
Is Kevin Love the missing piece to them? You know, let's say if they could build up Barnes, get him back, make him an attractive trade asset in some sort of package. If somehow they don't have to give up Klay Thompson in that trade, which it doesn't seem like that necessarily would be possible because it's Minnesota very much seems to want Klay Thompson, which I don't blame them. He's a very nice player. If they can bring in Kevin Love, does that put them potentially over the top in the West?
Well, again, we would have to all. It all depends on what they would give up. But and by the way, I would. I think Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. To me, if I'm the Warriors, that's my backcourt for the next 12 years.
Don't mess
I'm
with
not
it.
touching that. I'm not touching that because they have such great
They
chemistry.
do.
Klay Thompson can cover for Steph Curry when there's a tough guard to check
Right,
on
they can
defense.
cross switch.
They, they, they. It's look. You don't break that up. They're both young. They haven't even touched their prime together. And this is most important, they get along well. It's
That's
hard to
underrated.
find.
That's
What's
underrated. That's
that?
what I like about Wall and Beal here in DC. They actually, not only do their games complement, but personality-wise, it doesn't seem like there's any, you talked about earlier, there's no fighting over the ball. There's no fighting over the ball off the court either. They seem to get along very well. And a lot of times the NBA, you have fighting over the ball on and off the court, so to speak.
It's so important, Patrick. It's so important when you find two players that share the same vision, the chemistry, and they haven't touched their prime, and you know they're both going to be good. You don't mess with it. So as far as Kevin Love, look, I'd love if you're Warriors, you'd love to have him, but it's the same situation as with Cleveland. You're saying I'm not going to sacrifice a good young player for another player who can come join us for free the following summer. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. The Spurs, we should talk about them defending champs. They were interestingly in the running for Gasol, reportedly, which I thought Ken came out of nowhere, and I'm sort of sad he didn't sign there because I think it would have been really fun to watch him in the Spurs offense. So it looks like they're going to basically run it back with the same group that just won. Should they be considered the favorites still next season? Or at some point, do Parker, Duncan, Ginobili just get too old?
Well, I think you have to put them in the mix. Whether they're the out and out favorite, I don't know. Because again, we're still waiting for some more dominoes to fall. But I would say that Greg Popovich has done such a magnificent job the last 2 or 3 years preserving those guys, and not only preserving them, because you can't preserve them unless you instill confidence in their replacements, you know, their subs. So Greg Popovich has done such a great job boosting, you know, the ability of guys like Boris Diaw, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, Patty Mills, where he feels comfortable enough playing Patty Mills 25, 30 minutes and giving Ginobili a rest. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you've got a kid, this Kyle Anderson kid is so intriguing that they got from UCLA in the draft. He's had a good summer league. He seems like he's like a, you know, a multi-skilled guy who's going to get you assists, rebound. He seems to me the perfect Spurs guy, a guy who was –
Sean, I watched because I grew up in Arizona, so I watch Pac-12 basketball all the time. And as soon as he was picked by the Spurs, I was just like, this guy's a perfect Spur. His nickname is Slow Mo because he looks like he's playing in slow motion. He looks like the least athletic guy, like maybe that you'll ever see in the NBA. But you're right, he's so skilled, he's good at everything, and he just seems like one of those guys that will just fit in. And like, I don't want to compare him to Diaw because Diaw was actually a very good athlete when he was younger, but he just seems like a junior version of that. Like, you'll just plug in and he's going to do a little bit of everything and has a high basketball IQ. And just, again, like the Spurs just seem to find guys late in the draft that work for them. And that's a real talent. Yeah. Other teams don't seem to try to do that all the time.
Yeah. And see, the Spurs put a premium on basketball IQ. You know, they want players who have talent, of course. Why wouldn't you want to
play talent. And the Spurs have talent on their team. It's not like they're a bunch of scrubs.
But the basketball IQ, collective basketball IQ of the Spurs, they're probably the Stanford of the NBA. You know, their guys know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. Now, if you put them like with a lot of other teams, and you took the Spurs roster and say take Oklahoma City's roster, right? And you just mixed it up, and then you have to choose based on ability. The Spurs are not—they're probably not going to get. Okay, maybe Tony Parker's going to get in the top four, but the first three picks are—not the first three, but three of the top four picks are going to be from Oklahoma City.
Sure, absolutely, no question.
But when you talk about that collective basketball IQ, see, that's where a guy like Kyle Anderson, 6'9", he can play two or three, four, maybe four positions. That's where a guy like that just looks like a typical Spur.
Sure. And okay, maybe he's not so quick on defense, but the Spurs showed, you know, this year they play such good team defense. They cover for each other. They make the rotations. You know, they force the offense to do what they want it to do. And offensively, they put so much pressure on you from every spot on the floor. You know, okay, it's all right if you're not a stopper. What I like about the Spurs more than anything, and you mentioned this even with them building up their bench guys too, is I feel like, you know, every coach obviously tries to put players in position to succeed and to do what they do well, but I just feel like the Spurs do that better than most teams, and I'm not sure why that's the case, but they really seem to be able to identify, here's what you do well. Here's how we put you in a place so that's what you're doing, and we don't, like we talked about with Andrew Wiggins way back when in this podcast, we're not asking you to do a bunch of stuff that you stink at and is going to expose you. We're gonna play to your strengths, not your weaknesses. And I feel like a lot of NBA, every team wants to do that, but very few are that successful at it.
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to, obviously, Popovich, and he's very convincing to, you know, getting the type of player who will listen to him. Who will understand what's at stake and blah, 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 and buy into the system. And they all have. And as long as that happens, you'll have guys like Tim Duncan, Ginobili, they'll play maybe another year beyond what people think that they're going to play.
You mentioned Kobe earlier and the Lakers, right? So they didn't have Carmelo, they didn't have LeBron. They had Jeremy Lin. And they brought back Nick Young. What's happening at this point in LA? I mean, is this basically going to be a repeat in some ways of the mid '90s pre-Shaq, Cedric Ceballos era Lakers, except Kobe Bryant in the Cedric Ceballos role, and we're just going to have a 2-year sort of farewell tour, and he's going to put up a lot of shots and get a lot of points, and going to play for a real mediocre team. I mean, are the Lakers just doomed until he's gone at this point?
Ding, ding, ding. Look, as long as he's on the roster. If you're the Lakers, you feel an urgency to win. But, you know, these are strange times for the Lakers. You know, in past years, they always got their man. and they always had players banging on the door trying to play for them. Well, neither are the case now. You know, it has been the case this summer, I guess I should say. And now, you know, Kobe's in a strange situation where, you know, this coming season, it's another write-off year. And you're Kobe, you're like, wait a minute now. We wrote off last year, we're writing off this year. I only got one more year under contract after this. What's going to happen the following year? And he has a right to be worried. I just think that right now the Lakers are, you know, they had this before Shaq, you know, after the Magic Johnson era ended, the Showtime era, they went through a lull.
Right.
And then after Shaq left, they still had Kobe, but they went through a lull until Pau Gasol came aboard. So I think right now they're in another one of those phases where, and it's a matter of how long it's going to last. We know it's going to last next year. And the question is whether or not it infects Kobe's final year. And if it does that, then how much longer? And, if, you know, who's Kobe's heir apparent? Kobe's heir apparent is not on the roster right now.
No, I think it's wait until 2016 and try to get Westbrook out of Oklahoma City. That's what I think they're going to try to do. But, I mean, it's a long time. A lot can happen. Who knows? But, I mean, look, it's always going to be an attractive city to play in. I don't think the franchise itself is as attractive without Bus running it, but it's still a historically significant franchise in the NBA. I think that has to count for a little bit with players, if not a lot. They clearly will have money to spend because of their TV deals. If they ever want, I don't think they'll ever go full nets, but if they ever want to go a little bit over the cap or pay some tax and, you know, maybe even pay some repeater tax, they can certainly afford to do that if they think it's worth it. I can't see them being down forever, but I agree with you. I don't see a path like in the next year or two for them to really get significantly better. I think it's going to kind of be Kobe just doing a really extended farewell tour, which is going to be kind of fun, but kind of weird too. Let's really quickly, the draft. Is there a pick you really liked or a pick you really didn't like? And also, from what you've seen, very limited sample size of rookies so far in Summer League, who do you think is going to have the best rookie year?
Ooh, well, let's see.
So that's kind of three questions there. Pick you liked, pick you didn't, rookie of the year.
I kind of like what the Sixers did. Waiting on Embiid, I'm down with that. You know, I think that was a pretty good decision. I think if he turns out to be great, then that's super. And, you know, they also got Dario Saric in that deal, and they have to wait on him too. So if you're the Sixers, you can do that because you're so bad right now, the franchise.
The tank just keeps rolling along for another season in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
But if you're going to tank, like really tank, I like that they're not half-assing it, so to speak. A lot of teams kind of tank, but they can't really bear to go all the way to rock bottom. I do respect the Sixers for being like, no, we're going to go all the way. We're going to snatch as many assets as we can. Then we'll figure it out. Hopefully that will work. There's a courage of conviction there that I respect.
Yeah. If you look at Orlando, I mean, to get, Aaron Gordon, you know, who I think is going to be pretty good, and then Alfred Payton,
right.
Really quick, wiry point guard who's built in the mode of another Payton. I'm not comparing him to Gary Payton, but he's just a high motor type point guard who, if he learns to play a little bit more under control, can be really good. So they were able to fill some pretty good positions there. The player who I think, I was never high on in college is Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. I know he's a tough as nails guy, but I saw him in person. I was in Orlando the other day. He's listed as about 6'3". I don't think the guy's 6'2".
I have to agree with you. When I saw him playing in summer league stuff, I was surprised. He looks smaller than he did in college, which often happens to NBA players. Like once they get the NBA, everyone's a little bigger. They suddenly look smaller. But yeah, he did not look like the same imposing. I mean, still broad-shouldered, like muscular guy, strong, but he didn't have that combination of strength and height that I thought he had in college.
And then one other thing, you know, as we know, the Charlotte Hornets just don't have a great draft history. You know, we can go on and on about
Wizards.
Who they picked up. Yeah. But Noah Vonleh, I, And again, I didn't watch a lot of him in college. From what I saw of him, it looked okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see story. I know he didn't play that very long in Indiana or whatever. But this guy went 0-13 in his first summer league game. And I know it's summer league, so I'm going to calm down.
But you know, the thing with summer league, though, you should never overreact to a guy doing well, but you should be concerned if they don't do well. You know, a bad performance means something. A good performance doesn't mean much, but a bad performance does mean something. Noah Vonleh, giant hands. That's all I really know about him. Apparently, he has like super enormous hands. I don't know. If that's like that's the draw or what? I mean, it looks like he's a good athlete, but can you play? You know, that's always a problem.
So anytime the Charlotte Hornets draft anybody, I'm immediately skeptical.
It just sets off your dubious meter. I think that's probably a good rule of thumb. You know the guy I like, and again, this is the classic. I think we have something on our site today about it. And this is the classic summer league, don't fall in love. But I don't care. I'm already in love, is Dante Exum. I saw that first step. I saw his craftiness with the ball. I'm just like, oh my God, this guy is going to be good. Maybe not this year, but he's going to be fun. And I think he's going to be really good. It's probably because I've seen about six clips of him. I don't pick him apart yet. He played in Australia, so I didn't really see him play there. But I just, the little bit, maybe you agree with me here. Sometimes when you've watched a lot of ball, like, you don't have to see much of a guy to be like, okay, they've got it. Now, whether they'll develop it, I don't know. Whether it'll work where they are, I don't know. But they've got it. Like, the potential's there. And I feel like I already saw that with him. Am I way overstating things, or do you think there's something with him too?
Neither. I don't think you're way overstating it, and I also think it's, you know, much too early. The problem I have is I hate to make snap judgments. I hate to make snap judgments anyway, but particularly on players who I'm just not that much exposed to.
You're right. Sean, you're the voice of reason here. I understand.
I mean, I might see guys, you know, take Exum. I mean, here's a guy who, with the exception of a 19 and under tournament, the big mystery. Big mystery. He never played against top-notch competition or anything. So, you know, other than in these private workouts and things like that, nobody has anything else to go on.
Kwame Brown was a warrior in private workouts. He destroyed Tyson Chandler. That was why the Wizards picked him. So I'm dubious of you. You're dubious of anyone a Charlotte picks. I'm dubious of anyone who dominated in one-on-one or two-on-two workouts.
Exactly. And by the way, you know, that one-on-one workout stuff, it became legend when Penny Hardaway went down to Orlando. Orlando was thinking about taking Chris Webber.
Mm-hmm.
Then Penny Hardaway, 2 days before the draft, they asked Penny Hardaway to come down for a workout. And he absolutely killed in that workout. To the point where the Orlando Magic said, okay, we're going to trade Chris Webber to Golden State, and we're going to take Penny Hardaway, and we're going to get a couple picks, and Penny and Shaq are going to be the Kareem and Magic of the East. Well, they didn't exactly become Kareem and Magic of the East, but when the NBA heard that Penny Hardaway had this great workout, all of a sudden, a big emphasis was put on one-on-one workouts. Here you go.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, in defense of Orlando, I mean, before he got hurt, Penny Hardaway was a fantastic player. He's almost like one of those, for younger fans out there, like a forgotten awesome player of the 90s who just his career was cut short by injury. But man, for a couple of years, he was fabulous. I think the hype was justified with him.
Yeah, awesome. And then, you know, he was good out in Phoenix, and then after that, you know, he was pretty much done.
He was still, he was able to still hold together for years in Phoenix, even though he didn't have the explosiveness anymore, which is, again, the sign of a good player. He had skill and ability, athletic ability. You mentioned what you liked what the Sixers are doing. I have one question about that. Obviously, everybody says the worst thing to be in the NBA is a treadmill team. You know, you're not good enough to win a title, but you're not bad enough to get really good lottery picks. You're just sort of stuck in being middling. And the poor 2000s Atlanta Hawks are always held up as the example of this. And to a point, I understand where that's coming from. But being from D.C., again, I actually think there's a worse fate than being a treadmill team, and that's being a treadmill lottery team, where you're stuck in perpetual rebuilding and you always have too many young players trying to figure out your roles. You have too many losses, too much player movement, too many coaches changes, just too much instability. And the guys you have are playing too many games that aren't under pressure and don't really mean anything. Like I said, I've seen that in DC. I think of the Clippers sort of in the pre-Chris Paul era. Is there a risk? You talked about Orlando and Philly and what they're doing. Is there a risk when they do that, that you position yourself, become one of those treadmill lottery teams? Your future's always 2 or 3 seasons away, and you get stuck there instead.
Yeah, there is the danger in terms of, Orlando Magic and Philadelphia 76ers, where, you're not giving your fans any kind of hope that something's going to happen around the corner. But
But even for your own
I
player
think.
development, is there a risk there too? Like, guys don't develop the way they could because they're just in that kind of environment too long.
Right. And particularly they're coming from a winning environment. I think you have to take it year by year and also understand that what you have to do during this time is to keep compiling assets to the point where maybe next year the Sixers can really turn around completely because they make a trade, a key trade, and they keep their cap flexible. They have a key free agent signing. So all of a sudden, all these young players on the team, maybe now they only have two of them.
But they're the two you
Okay,
really want.
the two you really want, and then you trade the others to get veteran help, and all of a sudden, just like that, your team is completely different from one year to the next.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what's happened with the Wizards. And again, I don't think that they've necessarily, done it in the greatest way. Like, they were maxed out on the cap. Like, they've blown a lot of assets, they've blown a lot of picks. But they did hit, Wall, Beal, hopefully Porter. Those guys are really the core, the future of the franchise. They're not in their primes yet, and I've seen them the last year and a half, 2 years, try to put veterans around them so they can actually experience some winning, so they can actually not just be stuck winning 20 games a year. I feel like that's the route they're trying to do. I don't know if it's the right route. I don't know if they try to do that too early. I don't know if that's going to make them, turn into just a treadmill team in the next couple of years. It's hard to say. But I feel like you're probably right. Like, for Orlando and Philly, they probably will make those moves in a year or two. They'll figure out these are the 2 or 3 young guys we want, and everything else we're going to deal away and bring in some guys that can help us win now. And hopefully then those young guys grow.
I would much rather be in that position than to be in a position like the Detroit Pistons, where you have a mishmash roster. Josh Smith making $15 million a year. You can't really change anything right away, and you know you're only going to win 35 games. See, that would kill me. I would rather be like the Sixers. I would rather be like the Lakers. I would rather be a team that has a lot of money to spend. And young players, and okay, I'll lose with them rather than, lose like that, because that is just a horrible situation.
How much has the new CBA influenced all of the player movement we're seeing right now? Because I think one of the goals for the owners, besides just taking back a bunch of money from the players, was to have stars be available more often, was to keep teams from doing what Miami did and acquiring so much star power in one place. I feel like on both counts, in terms of getting back more of the money and making their franchises more valuable, but also fostering more movement, that the CBA has worked. Do you think that's the case? And do you think that's good for the league? Does it sort of produce an NFL-like year-round news cycle, that used to not be there with pro basketball?
Well, I think, you look at the NFL, the one reason why they're always, quote unquote, in the news is that they have their draft 3 weeks, I mean, I'm sorry, 3 months after the Super Bowl. So you have all these, 24-hour sports channels that have to fill their time with something. So they talk nonstop blather about some offensive tackle from Oklahoma State who nobody's ever seen. And they can have a whole show around him. But the NBA, the reason why the NBA stays in the news cycle is because, the offseason has just taken, it's become a different monster now. You have the draft, okay? And after the draft, you have free agency, and that tends to go on for a long time, depending on the quality of the free agent field. Then you have summer league, and, then the NBA schedule's announced, and the TV. Before you know it, training camp has begun. Also, you have the USA basketball tryouts, and that's really an NBA, even though it's connected with the Olympics and the World Championships, it's an NBA operation because there are no college players on that team. But as far as the cap is concerned, I think that there are certain teams that don't care about the cap. I think Brooklyn doesn't care. I think the Knicks don't care. I don't think the Lakers care once they start winning. They're not going to care. You're still, and Miami really didn't care last year. You're still going to have certain teams. Yeah, they're going to care a little bit, but not a lot, you know, because they have the wherewithal to spend. And you have a team like the Indiana Pacers, a very good team. They're not going anywhere near that cap because they can't generate enough money in that arena. And in Indiana, where it's not a city that's not loaded with people making $500,000 a year who can afford a ticket, high-priced tickets, you know, they're not in that position. So,
right. You're not making the big money on your local TV deal, and you can't make the big money in your building when the really big money is simply just the front row and the luxury boxes, and everything else is kind of
right.
a throw-in.
And we saw this cap affect the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, you know, look, you've got three Olympians, but, you know, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. You know, you want to keep those guys together. They're young and they're just touching their prime, but they let one walk out the door. And see, that's unheard of. But they're in Oklahoma City, okay? They're not going to generate tons of money through TV, you know, the local TV, radio, all those other resources that the Knicks have or the Lakers have. That's not going to happen in Oklahoma City. And they felt that they could probably win without him. Well, they haven't been back to the finals since he left.
Great segue to my last question here. Now, I'm taking a lot of your time, but you mentioned Oklahoma City. You talk about them not having been back to the finals. Flash forward. We could have another decision summer, 2016. LeBron, in theory, could go somewhere else, but also Kevin Durant be a free agent, 2016. So decision times two, really. How realistic right now, and again, a lot can happen in 2 years, but just right now, how realistic is it to think that either one of them could end up with another team? Because I'm sure many teams are already thinking ahead and already setting themselves up to clear room. I know the Wizards are thinking about that. I'm sure the Lakers are thinking about that. I'm sure half a dozen teams, if not more, are thinking about that.
See, Patrick, you're the problem with the NBA.
I'm the problem. Because the Wizards have been terrible for so long, and I just desperately want Durant here. How is that a problem? I need hope. Sean, sell me hope. David Stern sold me hope. I need hope. That's a pedal hope.
You are the problem with the NBA, where people they're already thinking about when the next free agent leaving. You know, but look, I can understand why you think that way and a lot of other people think that way. When you look at a player like Kevin Durant, who's so special, the first thing you think about when you're a fan of a team in another city is whether or not there's any discord, whether or not he's right. unhappy, whether or not there's something that could drive him away, whether or not he's even thought about signing an extension.
Westbrook and him looked at each other funny one night in April. There's a chance. You're saying there's a chance.
You know, Kevin Durant is so tied emotionally in every which other way to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, when I saw his MVP speech, I kind of been like, yeah, I don't think he's probably going to end up coming here.
You know, it's such a beautiful story how a superstar in a small Midwestern town had bonded. You know, what he did during the tornado a couple of years ago, he has he opened up a restaurant there, I want to say in the last several months, and it already is like, you know, hard to get a reservation. It's a soul food restaurant in downtown Oklahoma City. You're like, what's a soul food restaurant doing in downtown Oklahoma City? And it does great business. The community loves him, and he loves the community. And they'll pay him whatever it takes.
Right, and they can pay him the most, right? They'll be able to offer more money than anybody else, I assume.
Exactly, right. So I'm saying, well, I mean, for him to come back to D.C., yeah, I guess so, but it's hard to leave happiness, Patrick. It's hard.
And LeBron James, D.C., what about the Lakers? Do you think one of the glamour franchises can be like, come on, Kevin Durant, stop wasting your time in the Midwest. Come out here. Like, whatever you're making, you know, we can give you most of it. You know, Nike will make up the rest. You can be in movies. You want to be in Thunderstruck 2? We can make that happen right now. You know, whatever you need. There's live on the beach. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, look, Miami, LA, look, we know the New York. These obviously, those teams have an advantage in recruiting. Could any of them pull him away? Leave DC out. That's just my dream. But what about the dreams of these other fans?
You know what, Patrick? I'm going to say that you've spoken two words that have never been spoken before.
Thunderstruck 2?
Thunderstruck Thunderstruck 2.
Come on, man. You didn't like Thunderstruck? I haven't actually seen it, but I have friends' kids who have, so I know of it. I think it was direct to Redbox or one of those kind of movies.
Yeah, I've seen it, but I didn't see it enough to think that there was going to be a sequel. Let's just put it down. I'm being kind.
Yeah, I think so. But what about LeBron? Let's say Durant stays. Let's say there's this bond. They can pay him the most money. The team's still competitive. And let's say Westbrook even stays. And maybe they won a championship by then. And let's say that scenario's off the table. Is there any way LeBron would leave Cleveland again? Or is that kind of scenario also off the table, given the way he's come back?
You know, Patrick, I get the sense that you're tired of this podcast right now, based on your... That's what I'm getting from you. I'm getting from you that, you know, you want to end it, you know, before the conversation gets any lower. You know, that's what I'm. Am I feeling that from you?
I like the way they sent a message to Harrison Barnes by signing Iguodala. Am I sending Sean Powell a message? Well, you know what? Okay, let's take a break, a breather. I'm getting the message from you. That's been a very long season. And the last thing you want to think about is decision times two. So we'll leave it where we are. Sean Powell, thank you so much. Way more your time than I thought, but it's been a crazy offseason. The Omnibus NBA offseason podcast, it's been fun. I'm looking forward to the season. We'll get you back on sometime before everything tips off, and we'll kind of do our season preview. In the meantime, for Sports on Earth, I am Patrick Ruby, saying goodbye, Ruby Tuesday.